This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Most polls find political leaders rank very low when it comes to public approval. A newly formed group started in La Crosse argues politicians need to practice better ethical leadership. The group called Leader Ethics Wisconsin wants to restore confidence in politics by fostering integrity in elected officials through better ethical leadership. Here to talk about the organization are its executive director, Lee Roche, the president of the group's executive board, Rick Kite, and Sam Shinta, the president of the La Crosse chapter. WPR's John Davis asked Lee Roche where the idea for Leader Ethics Wisconsin came from.
It's actually part of a personal journey for me. After I retired from Western, I committed not to agree to sign up for any significant new activities for at least 6 months. And in many ways, that was a life sabbatical for me. It gave me an opportunity to reflect on my interests and the needs of our community and beyond. And I started having conversations with people, frequently over coffee, about some of the political dynamics and, you know, what was behind it and what could we do here. And those initial conversations were kind of scattered. They were all over. But as they went on, some things started to take shape. And so it led to the formation of this organization, Leader Ethics Wisconsin. It's organized as a 501c4 organization, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And by the time we had our program launch, I had over 50 conversations. And so I like to explain it that way. Where did this come from? Well, it came as an outgrowth of 50 conversations with community leaders, friends, people I knew and trusted and respected.
What is the ultimate goal, I guess, of this organization?
Well, let me frame that question a little bit in a different way, because if you were interested in becoming a servant leader or an ethical leader in business, in healthcare, in education, or in service, there'd be programs to help you develop those skills and so on. If you were in a hiring position in any of those fields, you could search for people who had a background in those areas. There are programs that recognize excellence when you have leaders that have those characteristics in virtually every field except the political arena. And so I view it this way. Why is that? Well, I don't think we expect it or demand it as voters and as citizens. And so our mission is to take those skills and expectations that apply in every other area and say, why don't we apply them here in the political arena? Why don't we support and encourage ethical leaders? Why don't we identify when there's an absence of that and help the voters to begin to expect and demand ethical leadership as well as any other organization?
I'm going to bring all three of you in on this question. What roles do you have in this organization or this newly formed, burgeoning organization? Rick, I'll start with you, Rick Kite.
Well, serving on the board, I'm really serving in an advisory capacity, helping to really get the program off the ground. We've got a lot of challenges. How do we grow the organization? How do we raise kind of the focus on ethics? And how do we recruit members to this organization? We want to recruit people who say that ethics is a priority in politics. It shouldn't be something that we just identify when something has really gone wrong. It should be one of the chief criteria that we look at when we're considering who to vote for. And so we're trying to get that going. But this is tough to do. Any organization, when you're getting off the ground, you're trying to figure it out as you go. And that's what the board has been doing over the past several months.
Sam Shinto, what is your role in the La Crosse chapter?
Well, the Leader Ethics Wisconsin is a statewide organization, and the principle behind this is we've got this statewide umbrella organization, and then we are going to be forming chapters throughout the state that will put on events throughout the year, help to engage voters and members at that local level so we can bring people together to hear speakers talking about various ethics-related issues. We can gather together simply to talk with each other and form a community of citizens who are demanding this sort of response from our political figures. We will be putting on a workshop annually for people who are interested in becoming elected officials at all of our local chapter levels. La Crosse is the natural place to start. That's where Lee is. And so we decided to start right here in our own backyard with the first chapter. We will be hosting a variety of events. And as I say, this is a way to build the community, to get the material into people's hands at that local level, and to make them feel like they're part of a bigger organization at the same time.
And Lee, as the tip of the umbrella, what are you going to be doing as executive director?
Well, I'm the staff for the organization. I'm not highly paid. I'm paid $1 a year. But it's important for me to assume that role to try to lead in the development of the statewide organization and be a spokesperson as we try to expand in other communities. So at the statewide level, what we're doing is recruiting members. The membership fee is $25 a year. And for that membership, you get a monthly newsletter. And that newsletter will identify through articles good practices and practices that might not be exemplary. We call them kudos and oos. We'll also have articles and editorials about some of the key concepts that are affecting ethical leadership. And then at least once a year, our members will have an opportunity to complete a survey. And the survey will be asking them to give grades to elected leaders in Wisconsin and at the national level. And the grades are not based on their political views or whether they're left-leaning or right-leaning or voting on any given policy. They're basically addressing whether or not they're truthful, whether they're transparent with public information, whether they're a unifier rather than a divider, and whether they work hard to represent their entire constituency rather than the simple majority that may have voted for them. And then we'll give those grades to the media and to the individuals and let them have that feedback from our membership. So as a statewide organization, those are the things that we're going to be doing. But the key action, I believe, is going to then ultimately be at the chapter level, because that's where you're going to have the opportunity for neighbors and colleagues and community members to have that kind of dialogue so that we can build something at the grassroots level. So with a successful La Crosse chapter, we believe we can take that model on the road and see if other communities in Wisconsin are interested in setting one up too.
Sam and Rick, something Lee said kind of struck me, and I wanted to ask you to kind of follow up on it. He was talking about the fact that our political leaders really don't need training in ethics to become political leaders. It's more than just those elected officials. It's people who are working for them that can occasionally run afoul of ethics problems. So where are, you know, as a teacher of political science, where are students learning this type of behavior or not learning the ethical behavior?
Well, I think it happens on several levels. So for many of our elected officials in the state, they will undergo some form of ethical training. I know here at the county, for example, when you get elected to the county board, you get an overview of the ethical responsibilities. I think Rick has worked a little bit with them in the past on that. And so we're doing some things with our elected officials, but the problem is, in my view, we're not doing enough of it. We bring in people when you're elected, we say, here are your ethical responsibilities, here are the expectations, but then we leave it at that. And we don't constantly kind of keep it in front of everybody's eyes. From the citizen and student standpoint, so I can cheat a little bit here and say, well, here at our department, we actually do have ethics courses in our public administration where we teach students the importance of those issues. And so what we're trying to do, at least from a political science and public administration student body perspective, is to bring those ideas front and center for students. When you get beyond that, you know, it's really it's a several level responsibility. I think it's a responsibility of our education system, which is tackling this now with the civics initiative that we have statewide, where we engage high school students and requiring them to take a civics class to understand American government. And hopefully that civics or that American government or civics teacher along the way is bringing up the issues that are related to ethics and ethical behavior, not just as elected officials, but people who might work for them as citizens as well, and what our expectations should perhaps be. And then certainly as the beauty of what we're doing here with the La Crosse chapter and with other chapters is we're going to build a community where we can foster those sorts of attitudes as well. And I think there's a lot of people based on the initial response that we've seen that really believe that this is stuff that needs to be talked about more, that needs to be brought front and center.
Rick, I'll ask you to define what ethics in political leadership would look like. Or what does it look like? What do you work with the county leaders on? Is there enough of it going on at other levels of government as well?
Well, you know, when Lee mentioned that we have kind of declining trust or declining confidence in our political leaders, you can see the results of this. And Gallup does an annual poll in honesty and trust in the professions. And the professions that do really well year after year are nursing and doctors, engineers. And one of the things about these professions is they're all leaders among all of the professions. Those professions in particular have a great deal of ethics training. And they don't limit just to here's a few rules of things you have to avoid. They say, what is it to be good or responsible in this profession? Because they understand that every single individual represents a profession. So if you have one engineer that's involved in some kind of swindle or something that causes the wrong materials to go into bridge construction, then you have a bridge collapse, that damages the entire profession. And so they kind of monitor one another. They're really concerned about this. And yet in politics, we don't have the same thing. And if you look at the professions that are at the very bottom, and in fact, members of Congress are at the absolute bottom of that poll right now. It hasn't always been that way. But it tends to be professions that really don't take ethics really seriously. And we have what we call rules of ethics, but that we lots of times the ethics watchdogs don't really have much authority for policing. And they tend to be some very simple things that are things that you shouldn't do wrong, not kind of aspirational goals. What is it to be a really good person in this kind of role? And so that's kind of what we want to bring to this. We're not trying to say, okay, let's catch somebody in wrongdoing, and then we aren't going to have that kind of enforcement anyway. But we do want to raise the level of conversation, and so that we get the opportunity to say, so here's somebody who, say, is exceptionally honest, exceptionally truthful. Here's somebody who is very transparent with how they deal with information, communicate with the public. Here's somebody who goes out of their way to unify colleagues, maybe to work with other colleagues around issues that are really important and not just to kind of the conquer and divide strategy. And so we're really going to look closely at how people conduct themselves in politics, not just at how they might violate some rules, but whether they uphold really certain high standards of conduct.
Will this be at all levels of government?
Well, initially we need to make sure that our membership aligns with who we're tracking and monitoring and so on. So as our membership grows, we can look at possibly taking these grades, so to speak, and applying them to local elected leaders. But a chapter would make that decision. But right now we're focusing on the key national leaders, president, vice president, the two senators, the 8 congressional representatives, and then the statewide offices in Wisconsin, the governor, attorney general, state superintendent. And so essentially you're looking at the positions that would reflect who we are. We don't want to have a survey go out with a relatively small pool, or we don't want a survey to go out and try to grade someone who's on the other part of the state that we have no connection with. So as the organization grows, I think you'll see the potential for the representation also grow.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We are talking about the need for greater ethics in politics with our guests, leaders in an organization called Leader Ethics Wisconsin, a movement that has started in La Crosse with the goal of spreading to other parts of the state. Lee Roche is the group's executive director. Sam Shinta is the La Crosse chapter chair of Leader Ethics Wisconsin. And Rick Kite is the president of Leadership Ethics Wisconsin's executive board. Rick, to my knowledge, every governmental body has ethics rules it must live by, you know, whether they shift or not as ethics are called into question is another story, but there's always somebody from the state assembly, for example, lives under ethics rules.
Right.
Somebody
yeah.
for the Senate. Same thing in Washington. And we have local governments doing that. Is there somebody in this country that's doing ethics in politics really well right now?
What you mean is, are there politicians that are doing ethics?
No,
Is there bodies?
Yeah,
it's a really interesting question because the way we've kind of defined ethics in politics is a minimal acceptable standard of conduct. So you don't. It's not that you have to be very good to stay out of ethical trouble. You just have to not do anything really bad. And so, but that's not good enough. I mean, in this country, we are really proud of our democracy, but we're not proud of our politicians. So why don't we hold our politicians to a higher standard? And we certainly do this in other professions. So many professions, they have like, it's not just rules that you have to avoid violating certain rules or you'll be punished for them. These are standards of conduct. This is what it means to be, say, a good nurse, a good engineer, a good dietitian. We have this in so many professions. And we've somehow convinced ourselves that we don't need it for politics. We can just say, oh, we don't want somebody to take a bribe. Well, that's a really low standard.
Yeah. There's one other aspect of this as well. And we really are focusing on leadership ethics because there's a responsibility that comes with being a leader. And in fact, you know, years ago I did some research, personal research on silos and turf wars and, you know, how do they start and what do leaders do to try to address them and remove them? And we found out is there weren't a lot of good solutions, but there were some things that were essential. First of all, having a strong leader that can set direction. To set clear goals and keep working on those. The goals aren't going to last forever. They're going to be out there for maybe 6 months, 9 months or so, and then you have to keep working on them. But here's the thing. In the absence of that strong leadership, the conflict that occurs like this is like anything goes. And so there's a responsibility that comes with being an elected leader because you set the direction and serve as a role model for many other people. And so we really want to focus on that. And we're not going to be the morality police, and we're not going to be checking to see who might have broken laws or done some things. There are other ways that those things can be addressed. We're going to focus on the leaders.
Why is now a good time to start an organization like this, Lee?
Well, there are several things that are happening now that are really concerning to us. You know, we're a divided nation, but if you look at it, in many ways, we're a nation divided by design. I mean, we were a divided nation during the Vietnam War. 100 years before that, we had a civil war. But there are things now that are happening in think tanks that are causing, internal and external to our country, in fact, that are causing these rifts to occur even more so. And so when you look at the dynamics that are behind this and potentially the role models that find the playbook to be successful in politics might be a pretty dirty playbook, essentially, it could really erode the integrity of the American democracy. And so right now, I think, is the time for people to rise up and say, wait a second. We're proud of our country, and we're very proud that we have a democracy in America, but we can't accept things that are unacceptable. And so that's really the goal that we're trying to bring forward. But we realize this is this is a long-term challenge. And one of the opportunities that we feel, and one of the things we can do, is to encourage next-generation candidates who develop a playbook as an ethical leader. So by encouraging that, people running for school board or county board, essentially it's not how to follow the rules, but how to be an effective ethical leader. If we can do that from the beginning, perhaps in 10 years or so beyond, we can see a difference.
Sam or Rick, do you want to weigh in on the question of why now for this organization?
Well, I think this organization could have been founded at various points in American history. We have this myth that we live under in society that, well, politics is worse than ever before. And I challenge those people to go back and study the election of 1800. It's been there from the beginning. We are a country, as Lee pointed out, that is based on a certain amount of divide. The founders, and in particular James Madison, saw that and feared that and tried to create a government that would protect against some of those impulses. But it seems for a variety of reasons, and I tend to look at most notably technology, it seems to be enhanced in our present day and age. So the ability to do this now not only seems that the problem seems more acute and feels more personal and feels more visceral, but our ability to then tack against it with using technology and outreach also, I think, is very prominent. So when we talk politics in the world, you hear people all the time say, well, we want elected officials who are principled and ethical. And the problem is we haven't really followed through on that as voters. An organization like this gives an opportunity to build a community of people that say, well, we say this, and by the way, this is what we mean by that.
Define a little more what you mean by technology. And where it's a problem now and how it's a problem now.
Well, as I talk with my classes at the high schools and at the universities, we today, the way the technology is set up, it reinforces the silos that we live in. We can get all of our news and social relationships from one point of view. We don't even have to creep out of what I always call the warm, comfortable blanket of hearing things that don't challenge us whatsoever. And so when we live in that world, it feels really comfortable and it reinforces a lot of what we think we believe or what we maybe do believe. But the problem is that there's this whole other world out there that is existing and that could perhaps challenge us and allow us to see that there are other points of view. So technology has just really reinforced all of that in our recent history, social media, news organizations. If you are a liberal or you are a conservative, you can solely consume social media and news that appeals and caters to your point of view only. That allows us to be divided. And that to me is a challenge that we have to force ourselves to break out of.
I'll throw this out for all three of you, but I'll start with Sam. You're talking about the fact that politics has always been a kind of a dirty game. Have there been periods in our history, in this country anyway, where we've been led by ethical leaders? And you know, can you talk about time frames or issues that have been dealt with ethically?
Sure, I would. I would think sometimes the crises of our history bring out the best in us. So we look at the leadership of Lincoln, and I think a lot of people would come to Lincoln as someone who represents an ethical leader. Now, if you dig a little deeper, you realize that to do some of the things he did on the big picture, he had to bend the rules a little bit at times. But overall, here's somebody who was willing to be transparent with his actions, who was willing to bring people in from the other side, people who disagreed with him, the famous team of rivals, to try and create a government that could be more representative, that could be speaking more broadly. I look to Wisconsin as an exemplar in this, and the progressive movement of the early 20th century that developed here. One of the key things that bolstered that progressive movement was transparency in government. That's what they were demanding. And so we saw people like Robert La Follette, right, Fighting Bob here, calling for greater government transparency, a government that would respond to what people were looking for, would represent the citizens, that would be open so that people could participate. And so, yeah, when we talk about why now and why in Wisconsin, well, this seems to be a natural fit.
Mm-hmm. Do either of you two want to respond to that?
Could I just mention one thing? George W. Bush, right after the terrorist attack of 9/11, went out of his way to make it clear that the attack wasn't attacked by Muslims, it was attacked by criminals. And this is one of the things we're looking for, somebody who wants to unify rather than divide. And the way our politicians use words has a very powerful effect. So we want to pay attention to those things and recognize those things. And this is one of the things that we'll be doing in our meetings and in the newsletters, is recognizing those moments. So even if somebody, we wouldn't say that a person, say, is always ethical or always unethical, what we're trying to do is say, bring to attention those times that kind of stand out. And what this does is it helps focus voters' attention on those things. This isn't just about grading the politicians. It's also about creating a culture of citizens and voters who are in the habit of looking for ethical conduct and making that a priority. And so what we're trying to do is kind of raise the norm. Instead of saying, well, the norm is that we don't really care about ethics because we just care about our side winning, we say, no, we're holding one another accountable to look for ethics as a primary criteria for voting.
Rick Kite is the president of Leader Ethics Wisconsin's executive board. Sam Shinta is president of the La Crosse chapter, and Lee Roche is the group's executive director. They're talking about what they hope to accomplish with Leader Ethics Wisconsin, a nonprofit political group started in La Crosse to increase ethics in politics. They're talking with WPR's John Davis. Coming up, how will Leader Ethics Wisconsin leaders know when the group is making a difference? You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Leader Ethics Wisconsin is a new political nonprofit group that's working to improve ethical leadership in politics. WPR's John Davis sat down with group leaders Sam Shinta, Rick Kite, and Lee Roche to talk about the organization's mission.
I think in the region, the Seven Rivers region, in our part of the state, we've had a good track record and good fortune, I would say, of having elected leaders that are willing to be bipartisan, are willing to work for the collective good. And so maybe we are primed here to develop this model and then try to bring it out to other communities where they might be facing a different history. And so anytime you can cite good examples, you're going to be far more effective than if you're basically in the process of finger-pointing and blaming, which is what is so inherent in politics right now.
Lee, who are you trying to reach with this? Are you trying to reach the politician or the informed voter? Or, let's face it, there's a big percentage of the population who either doesn't vote or doesn't even try to learn what's going on. They're uninformed.
Yeah.
So who is your target?
Well, we're working hard to be nonpartisan in our approach so that we can appeal to people who are independent thinking. They may politically, philosophically lean one side or the other, but they're concerned about the dynamics and how things are being done. And frankly, I think this is a population that's been quiet right now because there's a lot of noise on both sides and everywhere else. We're also going to see if how elected leaders respond to this. You know, the the change process is not linear. And so if we can bring information out, we can see how these things can affect how elected leaders or maybe business leaders who are influential and can serve as models can have an impact on the way elected leaders are viewing things because they sense there's a changing dynamic starting in the local community. We'll see.
So you're not going after everyone. Maybe that 8% that is willing to vote either way in any given election depending on who's on the ballot.
Well, we know there'll be some people that are going to be so firm in their beliefs that they're not going to find this to be appealing. But I think it's bigger than 8% that in our country that are looking for ethical leadership. They want to believe and be proud of our government. And so we're going to see how large that pool is and how well they respond to this.
Lee, I think if I recall, if I have my facts right, you're the one who's actually run for office who's on the panel. You ran for Congress back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
How has the political process changed since you ran for election?
Well, a lot has changed in 20 years since I was a candidate. The influence of money has grown dramatically. And then I think the idea of outside influences with money coming in and having an impact. And then the social media impact now is really dramatic. And the use of social media to actually, and data analytics to actually get into smaller communities and influence things, they just weren't there back then. But the dynamics of the challenges of ethical leadership were there at that time as well. And the influence of money was there. And I like to share the story that when I was a candidate and I thought that, you know, I was raising money from individual donors primarily, but I thought I could go after some political action committee money. If I'm philosophically in agreement with where they're going, then I could see if they would give me some funding. And typically the process was pretty basic. You'll contact them because you're looking for their money, and they'll send you a questionnaire. And the questionnaire might be multi-page. It might be a single page. And they'll ask you, how would you vote on this issue? Would you vote to support this, yes or no? And you start going down the questionnaire, and you realize you're saying, yes, I can do this, and yes, I'll agree to do that, and yes. And then you reach a point, maybe it's question 9 or 10 out of a 10-page questionnaire, and you say, I can't do that. I won't agree to that. I don't want to be committing to something that I wouldn't do or want to do if elected. And so if you don't vote 10 out of 10, you're not going to qualify for their funding. Well, those are challenges. There were challenges then, and they're going to be challenges now for the next generation ethical leaders. So we have to help people understand how they can develop a better grassroots campaign, to build a campaign team that can really make that work more effectively. So you're less susceptible to those influences. So the times have changed dramatically, but the need to find alternatives is maybe even more compelling now.
Sam, I'm wondering if you can put these times in perspective when it comes to things like money. As a reporter, I'm always trained to follow the money. That's the first thing you're told to do. Money is, you know, with decisions like the Supreme Court decision in Citizens United, money and special interests, how important are they now compared to the rest of history?
Increasingly important, and both sides. I think there's a tendency on one side or the other to look at money as a problem that only the other side has and special interests that only the other side has. Both sides are dealing with this issue, and both sides are benefiting largely from this issue. I think it was in the ramp-up to the 2016 presidential election before the nominees were set, we were looking at a potential of a group of high-level fundraisers on both sides raising about $1 billion each for the presidential run. And that is just astounding amounts. So the amounts are staggering, and we just keep topping it every election cycle. When we talk as political scientists, what you're never able to really see is that the money is buying votes necessarily, because what tends to happen is that the people who are supporting candidates with money are supporting candidates who are already predisposed to believe the things from the donors. So it's not that you're, it's not bribery per se, instead it's putting money behind those ideas. And you talk with American citizens, and right, left, center, they all talk about the fact that money is a problem, that money is an issue. Just click on the TV right now, and for I'll tell you all, for we're in Wisconsin, for the next couple months, your commercial time is going to be paid for by some candidate or some political action committee or some nonprofit group, one side or the other. So it's kind of the shame of our nation. We don't, or a shame of our nation. We don't handle it well. Other countries have figured out ways to deal with this differently. So I sense that until we really tackle this issue, we're going to continue to have this angst, this problem that we do have in here. But it is a big deal for sure.
So Rick, how does money fit into the principles of ethical leadership?
Well, it's mostly a matter of representation and who's being represented. We get the opportunity to vote, but there's an awful lot of people think that they aren't really being listened to, that their voice doesn't mean anything, and then feeling like their vote doesn't mean anything. Now, I think there's probably more cynicism about politics than is warranted. But a big reason for that cause is that we regularly have our legislation being written by lobbyists, and where, you know, it would go a long ways towards restoring confidence in our democracy if there was more public input on the drafting of legislation, not just on approving or disapproving after the vote is taken. So this is the sort of thing where I think money has a very harmful influence, in that it allows access to a really select group of people in the political process, in the very crafting of our legislation.
If I could go into what you do for a living as opposed to the group, you know, you help train business leaders in ethics.
Sure.
And business is about money. How do you deal with that issue with the business community?
Well, the business community, it's about money, but mainly it's about leadership in organizations. Any successful, that is, any organization that's going to be profitable over the long term, is going to have a team of highly engaged people. And how do you keep your employees engaged? That's the biggest challenge of leadership, and so. You do that by two things. You provide people with meaningful work, and then you give them some kind of input into how they do their job. That's shown over and over again, how you have a highly engaged workforce, meaningful work and some input into how they do their job. That is precisely what is lacking in our democracy right now. We have so many citizens that feel they don't have input and they don't have any meaningful role in the process of democracy. A lot of that has been because we've removed so much control over the political process from local communities. We keep moving decision-making up to the higher level, up to the state or national level. Of course we don't feel like we have too much of a voice, you know, when the decisions are so far away and involve so many people. Just some basic things like this. If you're going to be in an organization, if you're going to be an ethical leader, well, then you're going to make sure that you have an engaged workforce. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what our politicians should be looking at. This is a responsibility they have to get our citizens more engaged. And yet we see again and again decisions are being made that seem intentionally designed to disengage the voter. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio, La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're talking about the need for greater ethics in politics with our guests, leaders in an organization called Leader Ethics Wisconsin, a movement that has started in La Crosse with the goal of spreading to other parts of the state. Lee Roche is with us. He's the group's executive director. Rick Kite is president of Leadership Ethics Wisconsin's executive board, and Sam Shinta is the chair for the La Crosse chapter of Leader Ethics Wisconsin. Sam, you mentioned the fact that one of the goals of the local chapter is to do events that will draw attention to the issue of ethics and leadership in politics. Could you talk a little bit more about that? What some of the events are that you've done or are planning to do?
You bet. So just this past Tuesday, we did our launch event, our inaugural event, and we were grateful to have John Mettinger and Dan Kopanky talking about ethics in politics. We are now in the process of planning our next set of events, and we're looking not just for local political leaders to come talk with our community, mm-hmm. but also we'll be reaching into a statewide and perhaps even as we grow national level to bring speakers here to talk with these groups. The way that the meetings are set up is we have a little gathering time initially where people can just come, talk, shake hands, get to know each other, because again, that community aspect is such an important part of that. Then we have our presentation. I'll open it up. We'll have usually someone from our Leader Ethics Board. We had Rick speak at our last one, our inaugural event, and then we'll have our speaker, and then we'll have some time for Q&A from the audience, because again, as I think we're all reflecting on here, one of the important things is we want to get citizens engaged in this organization.
Leah, I've heard quite a bit from leaders, state leaders, that the La Crosse area is kind of unique in Wisconsin in that if there is an issue, there will be bipartisan mm-hmm. work on that issue. I've heard the phrase, we check our R's and D's at the door quite a few times. Mm-hmm. But it's my understanding that does not exist in all pockets of the state. So how will your organization try to make those inroads, I guess?
Well, I believe there are people in every part of our state that are looking for models of ethical leadership. And we'll find out about how those models and those chapters will develop over time. The goal here is to have a successful La Crosse chapter to serve as a technical model on how we're doing it so that they can look at developing something with a blueprint in mind. But I believe it's going to look different to have a chapter in Madison or Milwaukee or Appleton or in Waukesha, but it can be a successful chapter, and we're going to see how that unfolds. My first presentation to an outside group will be in late October to a group in Madison, and then we'll see where things go in 2019.
Do you have any other parts of the state that you're targeting or would like to go and speak to? Or,
well, we're going to be open to any area. If there are 10 members at large that want to band and form a chapter, we've got a framework that can allow them to do that. So it's not necessarily tied to major metropolitan areas, but we really want people to go to chapter events. And we want that dialogue at that local level, the conversation. You know, by design, we're not looking at becoming an anonymous internet organization. Although we might have virtual meetings at some point, we don't want to have the situation where people, without identifying who is on the other end and the receiving end, exchanging back and forth and causing some dynamics that aren't real. And so we think these chapter conversations can be the best way to try to approach that, because you're going to have neighbors or people that know the other people in the room in one way or the other and being part of that conversation.
Sam, I think part of the issue for politicians and why people don't like them is they tend to have a reputation for doing not a lot. Would term limits help bring a certain urgency to their jobs that I've only got 10, 12 years here, I better do something?
I'm kind of vexed by term limits for a couple of reasons. First of all, our institutions are such that it really does take a little time to understand the rules of the Senate, the rules of the House at the state level, the rules of the state assembly and the state Senate, to people don't come in necessarily with training on how to navigate right. those courses. And so you need to have a little time to learn that. My other problem is with term limits is that there have been some exceptional people who've served for a long time who've been hard workers who you don't want to get rid of. If someone is really good at what they do, we shouldn't just tell them arbitrarily, well, you're done because of this term limit. I think it has to come from us. I think if our expectations, and this goes to what Rick was saying before, I think if we set our expectations as citizens higher, we can demand more from our politicians. We tend to forget in our country that the most important word in American government is we. That's the word that begins our preamble of our Constitution. We forget that this is a government by, of, and for the people, not the politicians. And if we come together and we say this is the standard we want you to meet in terms of getting things done, working across the aisle, being productive, I think that we can start demanding some of that change. Now, I may be living with rose-colored glasses here, and I try to be an optimist on these things, like Rick, try not to be too cynical about politics. But I don't think the problem is we have people serving too long and they don't feel the fire lit under them. We've got to light that fire under them.
What gives you hope that this organization can make a difference over time?
I'll jump in here because of something that we just did last week or a week and a half ago with the board. We actually have created a youth membership category for this organization as well. We have a lower membership fee for young people under the age of 23 that allows for young leaders, not just new professionals, but college students and high school students to get involved in this organization. And so if we can engage those young people, I've got great hope that this is going to survive and thrive.
Mm-hmm. Rick?
Well, my hope really is in the future, and I think this is something that this is a long-term project we're engaged in here. But being a college teacher, I would say that the students that we've had coming through the university over the last 5 years have been among the most engaged, thoughtful, responsible generation that I've ever encountered. And I have great hope for them. But we also have to provide opportunities for how they get engaged, right? They have a lot, great deal of promise. I mean, we should be hopeful about this generation, but we also need to give them a hand.
Lee, as the founder, what gives you hope that Leader Ethics Wisconsin can make a difference in the long run?
I said it earlier, I believe the change process is not linear, and I think the political process will listen to respected leaders, and it may be a group like ours, it could be business leaders or other leaders that are chiming in and saying, this is something we expect for ourselves, and so we expect that of our elected leaders as well. I couldn't agree with my colleagues more about investing in the next generation. What was really kind of a cool thing is we had a speaker event, and Dave Skolgan was giving the overview, and I talked about the organization's dynamics. And after that meeting, someone that I know, an individual's in their early 30s, a well-respected professional, said he wanted to have coffee and talk about running for office. He says, I'm not ready to do it right now, but I'm very interested in learning more and what it would take. And I thought, there we go. That's exactly what we need. We need to inspire younger people that have the talent and the wherewithal to think about this as a real action that they can carry out.
Okay. How do you measure success of Leader Ethics Wisconsin?
Mainly by numbers. Really, if we can get people that say, yes, I think this is important, I'm going to show up in the meetings, we're going to talk about ethics, and we're going to make it a priority in our voting, that's how we determine success.
Sam?
Yeah, and piggybacking, I think Rick has the basic metric there, which is the numbers. But what I also want to see are people that are coming from various political worlds coming together. I want to see D's and R's and centrists and libertarians and you name it in the room talking.
And Lee, how do you measure success?
Well, I'm going to echo both of those comments. You know, if our membership grows and the conversation grows throughout the state, maybe beyond, who knows, then I think we've got something that's saying that there is something here that is of value and it's being carried forward because it's valued. So you can start to see how numbers and the influence of participation of people who are in the political arena is a key indicator of that, and you can see that that's the next step from there. But it's a longer-term view, and even in areas where we have an emphasis on ethical practices in business, I mean, we had the Enron fiasco, and Sarbanes-Oxley came in, and there's regulation on that, and unfortunately, you had things like Wells Fargo and Uber, and there's different facets of where ethical leaders can break down. So it's never-ending in that regard, but you'll probably see university programs in political leadership and ethics. You'll probably see debates where there will be questions that will be brought forward to the candidates to ask them how they're going to represent their entire constituency. Those are the things that may come out of this if we're successful.
That's Lee Rosch, Executive Director of Leader Ethics Wisconsin. WPR's John Davis also interviewed the group's Executive Board President, Rick Kite, and La Crosse Chapter President, Sam Shinta, about the organization. Leader Ethics Wisconsin was recently founded in the La Crosse area with a goal of spreading statewide. The group wants to inject more ethical leadership in state and national politics. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.